I hopped down the back of the truck and lurched to the dusty embankment on the side of the road. My mouth filled with saliva, a sign of the retching that was yet to come. I stumbled to the edge of the cliff overlooking the deep valley that was shrouded in darkness. I stooped, hands on my kneecaps, and waited for the bile. Somewhere, a branch snapped. An owl hooted. The wind, soft and cold, clicked through tree branches and stirred the bushes that sprinkled the slope. And from below, the faint sound of water tumbling through the valley. Standing on the shoulder of the road, I thought of the way we had left the house where I had lived my entire life, as if we were going out for a bite. Dishes smeared with kofta piled in the kitchen sink, laundry in the wicker basket in the foyer, beds unmade, Baba's business suits hanging in the closet, tapestries still hung on the walls of the living room, and my mother's books still crowded the shelves in Baba's study. The signs of our elopement were subtle. My parents' wedding picture was gone, as was the grainy photograph of my grandfather and King Nader Shah standing over the dead deer. A few items of clothing were missing from the closets. The leather-bound notebook Rahim Khan had given me 5 years earlier was gone. In the morning, Jalaluddin, our seventh servant in 5 years, would probably think we had gone out for a stroll or a drive. We hadn't told him. You couldn't trust anyone in Kabul anymore. For a fee or under threat, people told on each other. Neighbor on neighbor, child on parent, brother on brother, servant on master, friend on friend. I thought of the singer, Ahmad Zahir, who had played the accordion at my 13th birthday. He had gone for a drive with some friends, and someone had later found his body on the side of the road, a bullet in the back of his head. The Rafiqs, the comrades, were everywhere, and they had split Kabul into two groups, those who eavesdropped and those who didn't. The tricky part was that no one knew who belonged to which. A casual remark to the tailor while getting fitted for a suit might land you in the dungeons of Policharchi. Complain about the curfew to the butcher, and next thing you knew, you were behind bars at the muzzle end of a Kalashnikov. Even at the dinner table, in the privacy of their home, people had to speak in a calculated manner. The Rafiqs were in the classrooms too. They had taught children to spy on their parents, what to listen for, whom to tell. What was I doing on this road in the middle of the night? I should have been in bed, under my blanket, a book with dog-eared pages at my side. This had to be a dream, had to be. Tomorrow morning, I'd wake up and peek out the window. No grim-faced Russian soldiers patrolling the sidewalks. No tanks rolling up and down the streets of my city, their turrets swiveling like accusing fingers. No rubble. No curfews, no Russian army personnel carriers weaving through the bazaars. Then behind me, I heard Baba and Karim discussing the arrangement in Jalalabad over a smoke. Karim was reassuring Baba that his brother had a big truck of excellent and first-class quality, and that the trek to Peshawar would be very routine. He could take you there with his eyes closed, Karim said. I overheard him telling Baba how he and his brother knew the Russian and Afghan soldiers who worked the checkpoints, how they had set up a mutually profitable arrangement. This was no dream. As if on cue, a MiG suddenly screamed past overhead. Karim tossed his cigarette and produced a handgun from his waist. Pointing it to the sky and making shooting gestures, he spat and cursed at the MiG. I wondered where Hassan was. Then, the inevitable. I vomited on the rocks, my retching and groaning drowned in the deafening roar of the MiG.